of G, Shawa, Toksuk Newsom, Salama. Thank you for listening. Welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. We have conversation and music on this first Friday, November 7th, 2025. First, we chat with artist Golga Oscar, whose exhibition, Continuing My Grandmother's Legacy, Celebrating Yupik History and Culture Through Photography and Textile Work, opens tonight at the Alaska State Museum with an opening reception followed by an artist talk. Then we have music and conversation with Juno musician Marion Call and special guest Fairbanks musician Emily Anderson. They have a concert tomorrow at Spice Indian Cuisine Restaurant where they will be sharing songs. That's coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinok John Martin. And the word this week is keet.
Keet.
That means killer whale. And here's a sentence. Our paternal uncles are killer whale people. Let's hear it again.
Keet.
Killer whale. Gunesh Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinok John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kagwantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream for a behind-the-scenes look in the studio on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Golga Oscar is an artist who honors his culture by creating Yupik traditional and contemporary artwork. He is also interested in engaging younger generations to pursue their cultural art and traditions. Tonight at the Alaska State Museum, the exhibition Continuing My Grandmother's Legacy opens with a reception from 4:30 to 7 p.m., followed by a lecture with Golga talking about his work. I am pleased now to welcome to the studio Golga Oscar. Koyana Chaknak, thank you so much for being here, Golga.
Yeah, Koyana, for inviting us. And I have this.
Oh, one. I'm about to introduce her. Don't worry. No, it's all good. Yeah, so, and of course, we also have Museum of Curator Exhibitions, Jackie Manning. Thank you so much for coming in, Jackie. Gunnith Cheese, for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, Jackie, I first want to ask you, this is, Golga's exhibition is a continuation of the solo artist series, right? Can you tell
yes.
us a little bit about that series and
yes.
what that is?
So every couple of years, the museum opens a call statewide for artists to apply for a solo exhibition. And I was just thinking back to when Golga applied, which was in 2023. Mm. And in his proposal, he said his intention was to use the museum's collection as a part of his work. Mm. So this is it's a couple years in the making, this exhibition. He's been to Juneau a couple times along the way, so summer of 2024, he came to Juneau and did a lot of research in the museum's collection, looking at parkas from his region and masks and headdresses. And then he came back this last summer and made photographs using the collection. So that's part of his exhibit. And then also he makes his own garments and as well as photographs and ledgers.
So that is fascinating. We'll get to all those details. That sounds really interesting. I've had the pleasure one time of being led down into the underground storage facility at the museum where they had all the things that were not upstairs.
Was that in the old museum?
No, that was in this museum. Okay. Yeah, way back in the it was right near the time it was opening, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, Ellen Carley was gave me a fun tour down there. Anyway, so the series though, when you put out the call, I'm fascinated by the fact that Golga applied in 2023. So do sometimes people apply and they're part of are you working a couple years ahead?
At the very minimum, I try not to have the call. Anybody who's scheduled as the first artist, at least they have a year.
Okay.
So that's the goal, is that we're doing the call out ahead, that even though we're booking for a couple of years, the first artist has a full year, to develop a show.
Yeah, because I know museums work, you guys work years in advance anyway.
Yes.
For the main exhibitions. But these, mm-hmm. and so these solo exhibitions that Golga's a part of here, are they running for, how long do they each run?
So this one runs about 3 years, 2024 through 2026. We've got another solo artist in this spring and then in the fall, and we'll be opening that call again soon.
Okay.
So please keep your eye out. And
how long will Golga's show run?
Golga's show will be up through January 10th.
So okay.
Usually we try to keep the shows up 2.5-3 months.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. So Golga, let's talk with you about this exhibition. I'm really fascinated. So when this call came out, 2023?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. So what inspired you to want to apply and tell the museum, like, hey, I want to use the things that are already in the museum?
I think when I applied, I wanted to try to give it a try. Sorry. And I was really fascinated by the collections that the museums held. The archive collection that they've been collecting since 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my proposal, when I wrote it, I thought about wearing the garment that wasn't, you know, worn since before the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wrote it, I thought about making the piece relive that moment, because you know, those collections has been in the basement for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to light up the spirit as well, so the spirit of the park, the spirit of the animal. So that was my intention.
So did you get to go down into the bowels of the museum and pick things out that you would want to put into this exhibition?
Oh, many times.
Oh, nice.
I think I've visited the State Museum for 3-4 times now.
Yeah.
And I'm always fascinated by the collection that they have, that they've kept throughout those years. I mean, it's... Every park, every piece is so intricate, so detailed. It's powerful.
Mm.
It's years worth of work and also resiliency. 'Cause our ancestors went through hardship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trying to survive. Great hunters, especially the great hunters, had a full-on parka that was made out of one animal. But as an unsuccessful person had a parka that was made out of various animals.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So you were able to find, what did you find down there that you're using? Did you find some parkas that you, like full parkas, like what you were just describing? Like there was a hunter who had a full parka out of one animal. Were you able to find that there? Or were you finding more the ones that were made up of various different animals?
Yeah, all of the parkas were one material.
Okay.
And most of them came from the some of them came from the St. Lawrence Yupik, as well as some from the Yupik Nation. So
okay, Wow. Yeah, it just must be, it must have been a journey to go down there and feel, like you said, feel the spirit of these pieces coming alive as you're taking them and putting them. Now, so did you, because I know you work in textile and photography, so what are we going to be seeing in the show? Is it sort of like were you taking photos with these items or what did you do with them?
So the exhibition is more of a multidisciplinary based work.
Okay.
So then there's going to be at least four of my parkas that are going to be shown. Those four parkas are, three parkas are a parka named Qalik, mm-hmm. which is a woman's parka. And then one of the parka is called Illai Rotak, which is a mink parka. And then there's going to be at least four other parkas from the State Museum that I incorporated into my photos this past spring, end of May. And then there's going to be leisure art, and then some recreated photographs that I got from my maternal family.
Yeah, and I saw this photo that was on the website that I'm sharing with those who might be on the stream. You can also see it at lam.alaska.gov, which is, it looks like, is this your grandmother in the photo?
Yes, that's my maternal grandmother.
Oh, wow. And she's holding a parka. And then that's you in the next photo. Is that the same parka? Or is this one that you recreated?
Yes, I recreated that one.
Wow. I mean, it looks almost exactly the same.
Oh, it can be. Mine is more of a detail. It's more overstyled.
Yeah, overstyled. Okay. Yeah, I want to get into your work here in a second too, in terms of your inspiration and stuff. But I just love, fascinating that you're in a sense doing those photos that people do, where they, you know, years later, you know, the kids are young, and then you take the photo with the kids later. But this is a way to do the same thing in terms of honoring your maternal grandmother, which is really, really fascinating. So that's awesome. This is Juno Afternoon. We're talking with Golga Oscar and Jackie Manning from the Alaska State Museum about Golga's exhibition, which is opening tonight, Continuing My Grandmother's Legacy. There'll be an opening reception from 4:30 to 7, and then Golga will be giving a talk at the APK Lecture Hall at the Alaska State Museum at 7 p.m., right as the reception wraps up. You can just walk right in with your cookie and coffee and listen to more, which is kind of cool. So this title, Continuing My Grandmother's Legacy, what inspired that title?
In today's generation, I am the only seamstress in my whole extended family, in both my paternal and maternal side. Both my parents' side. Mm-hmm. I have the responsibility to keep the culture alive. So when I first started skin sewing, I asked myself, who's going to continue my ancestors' work? So I took on that role and started to do a lot of self-research, as well as grabbed a piece of fur and needle and thread, and wanted to learn how to stitch. I started off by creating like little keychains, and then from keychains I went to headdresses, and I produced, to this day, I think I produced over 300 headdresses throughout my whole sewing career. And then after headdresses, I moved on to mukluks, from mukluks to parkas, and then from parkas to other little things. I also weave, I also make cubic baskets, but that's like not, I don't really do it often.
I see. Okay, those are both considered textile things, like working with, like the sewing and then also the weaving. Would those both be textile, or is the textile the cloth? I don't know. I don't actually know the answer to that.
I'm not sure. I think of it as more cloth, but I could have a broader.
Right.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah. But then the photography. Where did the photography start for you?
So I attended college down in Santa Fe, New Mexico, over at II, Institute of American Indian Arts. And I was schooling there for 4 years after I graduated, right after high school. So I graduated in 2020 with my Bachelor of Fine Arts, with my emphasis on studio arts in photography. After graduating, I haven't touched my camera. So then I think the Soul exhibition was a great opportunity for me to reuse my camera, but go back to my photography skills.
Yeah, so are you mixing? So, because I have another photo here. I don't know exactly where this photo is from or if it's part of this exhibition. This is the Yupik mask photo, yeah? Mm-hmm. And that's, is that, so is that a piece of, is that a garment you made and then did you make the mask as well and then take a photo?
No, the whole photo, I mean, all the garments that I'm wearing comes from the collection, the museum collection.
Oh, okay. Okay.
This past spring, when I first put on those garments, I felt some sort of presence, ancestral presence. Because, mm-hmm. you know, those stitches are hand sewn.
Yeah, somebody did that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was from the ancestors that were, I mean, what year was the parka made? I'm just very, you know.
You know, this one I'd have to double check what year. But we do know that one was made, you also identified it as made from caribou and wolverine fur. Mm. And I just to clarify, so there are four parkas in the exhibition that Golga made.
Okay.
And then there's also four parkas he selected from the museum's collection.
Okay.
And then he has the parkas from the museum's collection facing the photographs of him, the self-portraits of him wearing those parkas. So it's there's a really multi-layered dialogue that's happening in his exhibition.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Part of those photographs, the whole collection is titled Reincarnation. And each photo will have a title, Reincarnation, and then they'll base the year.
Okay.
And the whole goal of this collection is to let people know that no matter what gender you're in, you're named after someone. Mm. For example, if my niece who is named after my uncle, she obtained his Yupik name. Mm-hmm. So most of these photos are. The parkas are pretty much a female and male parkas. Mm. I mean, pretty much a mix. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wanted to honor the Yupik names through photographs and parkas.
Wow, sounds fascinating. When you were saying before, something I want to go back to, you were saying that you basically picked up a thread and needle and you started with keychains. And then it's led all the way to you making parkas and such. Would you consider yourself self-taught, or did you have some folks who mentored you, or were you basing it on pieces that you've seen and sort of reconstituting that in terms of learning how they were put together? How did you learn to do the thing that you do?
I think it's a mix. I mean, when I first started, it was pretty much self-taught at the beginning, and then along the way, I went to the community, mm-hmm. where I went to the seamstresses within the village of Tununuk as well as Kasigaluk, and showed my work to these older generation, my parents' generation, and they corrected me on the things that I made. I mean, mm-hmm. the mistakes that I made. So then, I ended up fixing my mistake, and that's how I learned. And then along the way, I think it wasn't until 2021 was when I started to visit archive collections within the whole state of Alaska. Mm. For example, the Anchorage Museum, the museum in Fairbanks, and the museum based here in Juneau. Those were my emphasis. And then when I went to their collection, I looked at their parkas and mukluks, and I started to accumulate more. I started to generate more ideas and a better understanding of how parkas were made. Part of my self-research, I've been doing a lot of reading within Yupik cultural identity as well as knowledge, spirituality. Mm-hmm. From the knowledge that I gained, I started to incorporate them into my artwork. Mm. For example, what is a Yupik number system? What is a Yupik color system? Mm. How are those two closely connected to our cultural art? Yupik number system are 3, 4, 5, and 7, the constant numbers that we incorporate into our parkas, mukluks, drums, anything within Yupik cultural And then you pick color system are red, blue, black, and white, which are red, blue, and white are the natural pigments that we used to use before the introduction of Western materials.
Mm.
And then the black is pretty much, the black color is what we get from the charcoal. So
I see. Wow, that's fascinating. So it sounds like, yeah, it's a lot of self-learning, but then also I love that you went to the community and started to branch out, because you said, like, you are the only seamster in your family, right? But the family is also the community, right? And so, like, reaching out and seeing, like, okay, what am I doing, and having the older generations sort of say and bring you along, which is fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit about your maternal grandmother and what her inspiration is for you?
So my maternal grandmother, my mother's mom, I have a total of 10 maternal aunts and 2 uncles. And then my mother told me that she had a total of 16 siblings, but at least 4 of them passed away back in the day. But her endless work of creating parkas and mukluks for her kids were powerful. Looking at her and thinking about her, thinking about the stories that my mom told, just makes me feel that she really cared for her family. Mm. It was all about survival. It was all about family back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I think I've produced over 4-5 different fancy parkas. And then I'm going to be creating a few more for my immediate family.
Mm.
So it's been, every time when I look back at my parkas, I tend to think about her creation.
What was her name?
Marie A. Charles.
Okay.
And then her Yupik name is Upsuk. And she was born in the old village of Nunatchok, or Daklechlak. Daklechlak is 5 miles south of Nunatchok, the old village site of Akulmut. Akulmut consists of 3 villages, Kasigluk, Nunapichok, and Atmachok. And that's a regional Yupik settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But every time when I look back, I tend to think about the amount of parkas that she produced throughout her whole life.
Mm.
And then my mother also told me that when she was a kid, mukluks were limited within the whole family. She would have to wait for her other siblings to go in, and then after they take off their mukluks, my mother would put their mukluks on and go play out. So it was pretty much taking turns.
They had to share.
Yeah, share.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And this wonderful knowledge that you're gaining through your self-taught as well as your community members, you're now working to pass that on. I know that in addition to being here this week for the museum, you're leading a workshop over at Zach Gordon Youth Center, and you have interest in passing on the language and the culture to the future generations. Can you talk a little bit about the work you're doing over at Zach Gordon and your interest in passing this knowledge down?
Yeah. So I'm currently teaching a Neskona workshop, Yupik Kedras workshop, over at the Zach Gordon Youth Center for the youth. When I first thought about it, I thought about the youth that are reclaiming their indigenous identity in this 21st century. Because growing up as a kid, I didn't learn all of this cultural identity knowledge. I had to do a lot of research within Jalista books that they accumulated throughout 3 decades.
Mm.
But I know how it feels. I mean, from my experience, I mean, from what I feel like right now, having this knowledge is powerful, it's healing, it's humbling, it's, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this, but my primary goal within the Neskon workshop is to pass my knowledge and tell them about what the Yupik dancing is, and spiritually, and, you know, and how Yupik dancing can heal.
Mm.
And wearing these garments to adorn our ancestors can also make us feel connected to the spiritual, you know, realm. So,
yeah, and I want to mention that you do have a website, thirdgenerationart.com, where you can follow Golga's story. He also has an Instagram where you can look at some of the work as well and follow his journey, not only in continuing to create art, but also to inspire and teach future generations. That's really inspiring a thing to be doing at what I think is such a young age. So, Jackie, as we wrap up, is there anything else that we want to say about what's happening at the museum? I'll remind people here in a second about tonight, but is there anything else coming up that you want to let people know about?
December, Alaska Positive opens. That's our statewide photography exhibit, and Patrice Helmar is the juror for that. And Patrice will give a lecture November 23rd.
Okay.
So excited to have Patrice back in Juneau. That's where they grew up, but also they're based out of New York City and teaching back there. So looking forward to Patrice in November and seeing Alaska Positive.
I love that. Okay, but the most pressing thing is continuing my grandmother's legacy. It's Golga Oscar's new exhibition. It's opening tonight at the Alaska State Museum. In about an hour, there's a reception that begins from 4:30 to 7, followed by a lecture with Golga talking about his work and all that he is doing. I love the story. I'm sure you're going to talk about exploring the collection and picking those pieces. And I love the idea of the reflection across, you know, the telling of the history and all of that. That's going to be so interesting to hear about. So I really appreciate you all coming in today and sharing with us about this work. Congratulations on the new exhibition, and Koyana for coming in today.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Koyana.
Gunath Cheesh. We're going to listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Apple cider is a fall staple. It's also a tasty side effect of grizzly bear management on the Flathead Indian Reservation. Picking apples means there's less food to attract bears. The Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Merzbach takes us to Northwest Montana.
It's a big day for Carrie Kingery, her husband, and their toddler, Henry. It's the two-year-old's first time picking apples.
You ready to pick apples, Henry?
Carrie parks her car on the side of a relatively busy road right outside Ronan on the Flathead Indian Reservation, about an hour and a half south of Glacier National Park. There's fields of dry grass here, with the Mission Mountains towering above.
We'll unpack here, and the trees that we'll be picking today are just along the road.
Carrie's a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes and leads the tribe's wildlife program. She and her family are out here to pick enough apples to make a few jars of cider. But the effort solves another problem. Homesteaders brought apple trees to the region in the early 1900s, and they spread from there. And bears love apples.
So you'll see a lot of times in urban areas, in open fields or along the road, you'll find random apple trees that will draw them in and then, you know, have them be right next to homes.
Across the West, wildlife managers are looking for ways to reduce conflict between bears and humans. For about 5 years, Carrie has helped run a program that connects landowners with hundreds of people who want to harvest excess apples. Montana's State Wildlife Department also promotes fruit harvesting to keep bears safe. And a cider company in Jackson, Wyoming does too.
We get calls every fall if we don't get our fruit gleaning equipment out fast enough because their trees are ready.
Carrie's husband, Hugh, picks up the apple picker, a long red stick with a little cage on top, and starts plucking fruit. The tree is covered with it.
There's almost no pressure required whatsoever. They're just ready to pop right off.
The family drops the apples into a laundry basket. Henry waddles around, double-fisting apples.
Apple.
They fill the basket in a quick 20 minutes. And hit a couple more trees on their way back to the car. Then head to a fall festival down the street to use a cider press there.
Henry, can you say bye-bye?
Bye-bye, apple. Bye-bye, apple.
Carrie says compared to other parts of the region, people are more tolerant of grizzlies because indigenous people and bears have coexisted here for a long time. The tribe's program is designed to ensure that healthy relationship continues.
This area has, even with non-tribal members, have always had a grizzly bear presence in the area. They were never fully extirpated or eradicated. We know that this has always been the bear's home. They created this area for us to live and flourish, and so there's that respect there.
She says that respect is the basis for how the Salish and Kootenai tribes manage wildlife. Hunting grizzlies isn't allowed in the lower 48, and the tribes want it to stay that way. But Montana, as well as neighboring states Wyoming and Idaho, are pushing to take grizzlies off the endangered species list and allow some hunting.
The grizzly bear is a species that is highly revered spiritually and culturally by the tribes, and so they have never harvested them or hunted them.
Picking and pressing apples is a fun and delicious way to coexist with bears. We're now at the Fall Festival, where residents are greeting farm animals like ducks and goats, jumping in bouncy castles, and gathered around wooden cider presses.
So right now we are loading apples into the top of the cider press. You want to put those in there?
Then Carrie turns a wheel to grind the apples, which end up in a bucket below. Next, she cranks a wooden block to compress them, and juice flows into awaiting jars.
Would you like to go first, love?
Okay.
She lifts the jar to her mouth and takes a big gulp. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Hannah Merzbach on the Flathead Indian Reservation.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Network.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter with outdoor clothing, gear, and footwear, including Gruden's deck boots and flip-flops, and extra tough boots for both men and women, located at the Mendenhall Mall and online at nuggetoutfitter.com.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. If you want some warmth on these cold Juno nights, you may not be able to do any better than some fantastic music paired with some authentic Indian cuisine. Tomorrow night, Saturday, November 8th from 6 to 8 p.m., you can enjoy local musician Marion Call as she joins musician Emily Anderson from Fairbanks for a cabaret-style dinner show at Spice Indian Cuisine. Marion Call is well known to Juno audiences for her musical stylings and for all of her efforts to promote music in Alaska. And she's breaking ground on a new album, so you might be hearing some new tunes never played in Juno before. And Emily Anderson now makes her home in Los Angeles, but she's originally from Fairbanks and is known for her layered songwriting that has made its way into film and television, video games, and more. If you are a fan of Love is Blind, you may have heard her song What If It's Not Enough in season 8 earlier this year. It is a pleasure to welcome to Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, Marion Call and Emily Anderson, and they are going to play a song right now live on the red carpet stage.
Oh, thanks so much for having us. Thank you for that introduction. We're going to play one of my songs. This is called Margaret. It's for all the best friends out there. It's off my record, Salt and Water, and Marion's going to sing with me.
I don't have the hands to count the times you've seen me cry. Lately I've been pacing floors and talking to my wine. I'm sorry, it's been so long, but it's 2 a.m. You still pick up the phone. Margaret, you don't know the half of it. I've been sitting in one place for far too long. Margaret, you know that I'm full of it. You can hear the weather in my voice on the telephone. Oh, oh, Margaret. Oh, oh, Margaret. Years pass by and photographs grow dusty in your drawer. You might not live right down the street like you did before. I'm sorry, it's been so long, but it's 2 a.m. You still pick up the standing in one place for far too long. Margaret, you know that I'm full of it. You can hear the weather in my voice through the telephone. Oh, oh, Margaret. Oh, oh, standing in one place for far too long. Margaret, you know that I'm full of it. You can hear the weather in my voice through the telephone. Oh, oh, Margaret. Oh, oh,
right there is Marion Call and Emily Anderson. Come over here, have a seat here while I get everything refigured out. Let me see if I can get myself back on. There we go. Check, check, check. We got all the mics up. Yeah, excellent. Hang on a second. I can fix that. 1 second. Let me just make it easy. We'll make it easy on us here. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We are with Emily Anderson and Marion Call. They are doing a concert tomorrow night at Spice Indian Cuisine, and it is going to be a fantastic venture. So I want to start with, I haven't met Emily before. It's a pleasure to meet you. Gunath Cheese, for being here today, Emily.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And Marion, nice to see you again.
Very nice to see you, Boston.
And I saw on your social media post that this idea that you broke ground on on a new album. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means?
I did. I'm making a new record. It's been 5 years, but it's time for record number 13.
So, 13?
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay.
And so I finally had the songs that said what I wanted to say. And so I just got back from a big trip to Anchorage where I spent several days recording up there with great, great engineer. I'll do some recording here in Juneau too. I've done some already. And now we'll be collecting kind of like friends from around Alaska to play on it, to do do a little bit here and a little bit there. But yeah, we're getting the groundwork laid. Whole bunch of brand new songs, including one I just wrote like a couple days before going into the studio. So I'm really excited to start, you know, playing those for live audiences, sneaking them here and there. And our first shows will be, well, we have a house concert tonight. And there is, if you can't make it tomorrow night, if you're busy tomorrow night, there is a house concert tonight. You can find the details at my website, mariancall.com. You can RSVP there. But then tomorrow night is an open show at Spice Gallery with the nice little stage there. It'll be a listening room, be a sit and listen show, you know, not a talk through. But the food is great and the environment is great. It's a pay-as-you-can show, so everyone's invited. Bring the kids if they enjoy music. And we're going to do some really goofy songs and some really heartfelt songs. And I'm just excited. I love dinner and a concert.
Well, that song, Margaret, was your song. That was beautiful.
Yeah, that's Emily's song,
yeah,
to
lovely
be clear.
To listen to. Yeah, for sure. It was Emily's song, but it was beautiful to listen to. How did this collaboration come about, Marian? And then we'll start talking to Emily. But how did you get to be doing this concert with her tomorrow night?
Well, Emily is from Fairbanks and is hanging out in LA a lot these days, but she comes back to Alaska constantly, does all her record releases here, does some recording here, helps with the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival and the Alaska Music Summit, other big Alaska events. So she was heading up to Anchorage and Fairbanks for some concerts, and I said, hey, we're right on the way. If you want to stop, because I've coaxed her to come. She's played Folk Fest before, and she's no stranger to Juno. She did a show with me at the Rookery a while back. Mm-hmm. We had a great time. So I said, please, please stop, and she did. And so I got her just for two nights to do a house concert and do a show at Spice.
I love that. Okay. So Emily, do you consider yourself not you live in Los Angeles, but you're from Alaska, right?
Yes.
Is that how you like to say it?
I feel like Alaska will always be home for me. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. Most of my family is still in Alaska. My husband's family is up here too. And so I feel very emotionally connected to this state.
You're also here all the time.
I'm here all the time. I love it here. And it's always been my dream to kind of have a foot in both places, mm-hmm. and to use that to be able to bring people up to Alaska that I have gotten to meet through other music endeavors, and also to be able to be kind of a bridge to Los Angeles for people that are Alaskan and maybe want to come play a show.
She's let me couch crash multiple times in LA, so I can finally return the favor.
Nice.
This is so, you got to have your like diaspora outside when you're mm-hmm. touring.
That's right, for sure. So, and what was it, the music industry that sort of led you to Los Angeles in the first place?
Yes, I have a lot of friends that ended up either in Nashville or Los Angeles, and I like being able to be close to Alaska, so I just have to be two flights away.
Two flights, not a bunch. Yeah, yeah. Going to the East Coast, that's tougher for sure.
I know.
Longer rides for sure.
Well, yeah.
Because it is interesting, you know, I think about, you know, people who are performers or, you know, the music industry or, I mean, the movie industry, and they feels like sometimes you have to be in those places. But mm-hmm. I feel like musicians and, you know, writers and things like that can kind of be anywhere. So mm-hmm. was there a particular draw for you to be in Los Angeles?
Yes. I mean, I have some really close friends that are working producers and recording engineers. And so the networking opportunities there were beneficial.
Mm.
But I still feel like in this day and age, you can live many different places.
Yeah.
I feel like we've found a really lovely community in both places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to be able to be bi-coastal, if you will, even
yeah.
though you're sort of going up and you're doing vertical as opposed to horizontal.
I'm doing snowboarding, but early. That was always the dream.
Yeah. And
then someday you can retire to Fairbanks.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you, you've had a few albums that have come out. That last one, you had, that was from your album
mm-hmm.
that you released a couple years ago. Are you working on new material and new albums as well?
I sure am. I have a new album that is almost done. And I will be starting to release that in
2026. Ooh. Yeah. Something to look forward to.
I know.
Will we hear some of those tomorrow or tonight?
Yes.
If we were going to the house concert? Okay.
I can't resist playing unreleased material.
We always have to tell people, keep your phones away for this one.
This is your
little secret. This is
don't sneak
in
it
person
in.
Only.
Yeah, right. For sure. And I'm curious about this because I feel like there is the opportunity to, like you said, you knew some producers and being around the movie and TV industry. I mentioned in the intro that you had a song on Love is Blind, and we might go out with that song later today at the end of the show. It's a lovely song. It fits that show so perfectly. But you've had some stuff in video games and things like that. And so how does that work in terms of the mechanics of that? Are you working with an agent who's submitting for this stuff, or do you meet different producers that are like, hey, I'm doing this thing and you have that song and we want to get that? How does that work?
Oh gosh, I could spend the next 2 hours on this. Okay. So basically, there is a whole industry within music that is writing specifically for film and TV.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a bunch of different ways that you can do that. And you tend to write in a certain way that will lend itself best to film and TV projects. And then what you do is you get a team together, whether that's a licensing agency or you meet music supervisors. I know this sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, but
but it has to happen,
but,
right?
Yeah. So there's some like gatekeepery stuff involved, but once you get like one foot in the door, then you can just keep sending your material to that licensing agent or that music supervisor, and then they have to pitch it to the projects that they're getting briefs for.
Yeah.
And so when I write songs for film and TV, I have no idea where or when they will appear in film and TV, which is exciting, but it also feels a little bit like gambling all the time.
And I imagine that the benefit, though, is that the residuals are probably pretty good, the pay for getting something like that. I remember, like, Grey's Anatomy was, they always used a ton of songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew this band called The Weepies.
Yes.
And
love them.
Yeah, Deb Tannen. Anyway, they're great. And they would be on those shows all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And their music fit some of that stuff so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, when you're writing for that, do you have like specific style of song that you're going for that you know that they're gonna buy, basically?
Always Grey's Anatomy. Always writing for Grey's Anatomy all the time.
Still on the air.
It's, oh my gosh, if that, oh, that would be such a dream. So we have pitched to and crossed our fingers many a time. So we're
it is like gambling.
It's a dream. Now I'm like just thinking about how cool it would be to get in Grey's Anatomy. But yeah, so for royalties and stuff like that, it really depends on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've had friends that have gotten songs in soap operas, and because that's on network television and they play it again and again and again, then their residuals are add up over time.
Sure.
But actually, for a show like Netflix or like for reality TV, it's not that much.
Yeah. they're cranking that stuff out.
It's the same for actors, too. It's not exactly the same amount for network.
But if you get on like anything that's, network.
On a network,
Then it's better. It's better.
That's golden, yeah.
It's also a specialized skill in songwriting to be able to write that way. Like it's a particular thing someone would pursue.
Yeah, we'll hear a little bit of it at the end of the show today. I'm talking with Emily Anderson and Marion Call. They're doing a show tomorrow at Spice Indian Cuisine in the Spice Cafe part. It's a listening show, but you can also eat a little bit of yummy food while you're listening to Emily and Marion play.
So good.
It is no tickets are required. If you do want to have dinner, though, you might want to email nimi@spicejuno.com just to make sure that your party can sit together and if you want to set that up. And if you want to. And if you want to go to the house concert, which is tonight, you can go to mariancall.com And see if there's still space available.
Yeah, you can RSVP through my website, and then you will get the address. But you have to do that before probably about 5:30.
Yeah, pretty soon, because it's tonight.
Because it's tonight. But
let's get a sneak peek of what Marion might be playing for us tonight or tomorrow. Let me get the mic set back up for the red carpet stage here. 1 second, Marion. And... there we go. There we go. I hear you. So again, that's tomorrow night at Spice Indian Cuisine, or tonight there's a house show. And while Marion's getting tuned up there, Emily, in this microphone, would you tell me real quick, where do we follow you?
You can find me at Emily Anderson AK for Alaska. So that's easy to remember.
Emily Anderson AK. Is that .com?
That's my website.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my Instagram.
That's everything.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And now we'll listen to Marion live from the red carpet stage. What are you going to be singing for us today, Marion?
Well, this is a new one, and you'll figure out what it's called. I'm willing to let you guys have this one, even though it's from the future record project.
But, okay. Marion Call from the red carpet stage.
A very Juno song. You'll figure out what it's called. When I say, how are you? When you say, you know, there's an asterisk. Oh, there's an asterisk. Maybe it was always there, but now I see it in the air. A trailing asterisk. A little icon to imply what we would have to risk by diving in. There's a grace about that too. It's like admitting we're all human, that we all have unseen depths, and we are rather short on time. So I'll trust you've got a lot in your pretty little hands. So I'll handle you with care here in the Costco checkout line. And I'll say, I hope you're doing well. You'll say, as well as one could hope, and I do. So here, this little hope, it's for you. I'll pin it like a tiny star on the end of every phrase and let it shine, shine, shine. It's not a lot. It's what we've got. 'Cause it's disastrous out there, and you know, I know you know, and our dark laughter is pinned by an asterisk. You say it's nice to see you out again, 'cause that's your gift to me. I say it's been a long, long winter, but I'm learning how to be in spite of that. And I think I found my meds, and I'm picking pieces up one by one by one. And it's like I said, if there's an asterisk, maybe there always is, maybe there always was. That's how we cope with this. An asterisk, there always is, there always was. That's how we cope with this. I give you a how are you, you give me, you know, and an asterisk, a little passing gift. Maybe it was always there, but now I can see it in the air. So I'll handle you with care here in the grocery checkout line.
I love it. I'm going to take a guess that that's called Aster. I can't say the word.
I was admiring your diction.
Yeah, your diction was so good. Come back and sit down. That is so good. Let me get this resituated here. That was really great. That was a lovely song. I love the Costco checkout line song.
That's what we do, isn't isn't it? That's how Juno functions. That's how Alaska functions.
Okay, so say that word for me. Asterisk.
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 Asterisk. Like star.
Asterisk.
A little star.
Okay, yeah. Is that the name of that song?
Yes.
Okay.
You guessed it.
Or is it just the symbol?
Well, on my chart, it's just the symbol, but awesome. I think that would make it hard to find on
Google it.
Spotify.
On the services. That's so funny.
So.
What a lovely thing. They're going to be, Emily Anderson and Marion Call, they'll be performing tonight at a house concert. You can find out more information at mariancall.com to reserve for that tonight. Or tomorrow night, there's no tickets or reservations required. You can show up at Spice Indian Cuisine. The concert is from 6 to 8 p.m. If you do want your party to sit together, you can email nimmy@spicejuno.com or call 586-1036. All ages show tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I just want to mention that, too. All ages show. All ages welcome.
And pay as you can.
Pay as you can.
There's a recommended donation, but we would rather have you there than your money if we have to make the choice.
Yes.
And
also that garlic naan, can I just say.
Oh, yummy.
Excited.
Warm, yummy food, warm, yummy music. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect Saturday night in Juno in November. Thank you so much for coming. One last question. Any potential for like a collaborative co-writing song between you two at some point?
Oh, there's definitely potential for that.
Absolutely. Every time we meet, we talk about it. Mm-hmm. And like we're just hanging out more and more over time. So I think it's a likely.
Yes.
A likely situation.
That's wonderful. Okay, cool. Well, it's a pleasure for having you in today. Thank you for making the Friday wonderful, a good way to end the show. I really appreciate you being here, Emily, Gunath Cheesh, for coming in, and Marion for letting us know about this and for all you do for Juno and Alaska music. I really appreciate it. Gunath Cheesh for being here.
Gunath Cheesh, Boston.
So we'll go out today with the song that we were talking about. If you know the show Love is Blind, you will know that this song fits perfectly. It's just one of those songs that sort of fits in there. And this song is called What If It's Not Enough? It was released earlier this year from Emily Anderson. And you'll look for new music from Emily, both Emily and Marion. Is yours going to be in 2026 too?
Mm-hmm.
So we have new music coming from both of you in 2026. Follow them on all the online services or emilyandersonak.com or mariancall.com. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's What If It's Not Enough?
It's not enough.